Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. We're focusing, of course, on the World T20 today. The group stages, or the early qualifying stages, are nearly complete. And congratulations to Scotland for getting into the main draw for the first time in a World T20 tournament. That was a real emotional evening, actually, in Muscat, where they beat Oman by 8 wickets. It's just the match has just completed. And there were some real bear hugs amongst the Scottish players, clinching that last, well, one of the last places in the Super 12 section of this World T20. And we'll have a little look at the Scottish team. Of course, we're going to talk about England as well, who start their campaign on Saturday against the West Indies. We've also got Nasser Hussain on this show today. He was our guest in the Virtual Cricket Club on Wednesday, and he was talking in forthright terms about whether Owen Morgan should drop himself. So some fascinating stuff to come. But first, Simon, I guess we should just congratulate Scotland, shouldn't we?
Oh, superb effort for them to get through to the Super Six stage. I mean, the key victory was against Bangladesh last Sunday, and it was a really competent Scotland performance. Well, after a fashion, they were 53 for six, and to win a game from 53 for six, batting first, takes some doing. So, you know, it was a great effort to win from there. I think the win predictor was something like 4% when Scotland were 53 for six. They got up to 140, and then Bangladesh were really timid in their reply, the early stages of their reply, and they just were too far behind the rate. They needed 24 off the last over. They scored 17, and a memorable victory for Scotland to take down, you know, a full test playing nation like Bangladesh, and that has set them on the way to qualifying. They beat Papua New Guinea by 17 runs. Again, got a bit closer than they might have liked, but an absolute thrashing of Oman under pressure. It was a win or go home situation under pressure. There was no doubt they restricted Oman and then knocked him off with, I mean, two or three absolutely vast sixes. I know we sort of use a lot of hyperbole in T20 cricket, but I mean, there was 100-meter sixes. One was over the pavilion. I mean, it was a really clinical job. And now they get to play India and Pakistan and New Zealand,
which is absolutely what they need, isn't it? You know, if you're going to progress as a country, you've got to play the top nations as often as you can. So, a brilliant opportunity for them. I thought some of those shots, especially from Richie Berrington, were like golf shots. And of course, Scotland is famous for its golf. So, you know, maybe they're introducing the golf skill, the golf driving ability into cricket. It's good to see. And one other little point about that game, and in fact the tournament overall, it marks the debut, of course, of Oman staging some of these games, the match today in Muscat and a couple of others. And it's just a great thing to see, you know, another country staging international matches in a world context. It just shows actually that, you know, the game is slowly growing. And I mean, I did an interview the other day with Greg Barclay, the new chairman of the ICC, a Kiwi, and he was also talking in very positive terms about the future of the game and the growth of the game generally. We'll play some of his interview in a later podcast, but I just feel we're almost at a sort of inflection point in the game, aren't we? There's 86 countries now that are official T20 countries that are playing, you know, tournaments against each other or matches against each other. You do feel that the game is sort of spreading, actually, certainly in this format. And Scotland have just entered the big league now, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, underlying in this format, I mean that's something I think that worries traditionalists, that, you know, T20 has taken over, it is becoming, has become, whatever, will become the dominant form of the game. And those people who love their test cricket, love their first class cricket, you'll feel, well, you know, how is it going to go with that in the future? And, you know, well, we've talked about it many times in the past, you do worry for the future of test match cricket in a really sustained and sort of extensive way. Are these countries going to come in and play the longer form of the game? Probably not. It is going to be a T20 route.
Probably, you're right. But in fact, Greg Barclay made one very important point. He said New Zealand were given their test status in 1926. They didn't play a test match until 1931 because there weren't any other formats of the game to play internationally at that time anyway. And they didn't get a chance to play a test match till 1931. And they didn't win a test match till 1956. So it was 30 years before they won their first test. So, you know, some of these countries who are perhaps aspirational at test level, Afghanistan, Ireland, and maybe Oman in the future, and one or two others, Scotland, you know, they have to take time. They have to grow the base. And T20 is the way to grow the base. So, you know, just be patient, and, you know, maybe we will get more test countries in the future, but not right now.
Yeah, I don't quite share your optimism. Just a very different world then. I mean, I think that's the point.
Okay.
That's what I feel, that the shorter form of the game is going to be the dominant form of the game in the future. You know, whatever we feel about it, it's going to be really difficult to sort of almost drag it back. And that sounds deeply pessimistic, possibly, for those people who love their test cricket. I'm not saying test cricket will die. I hope it won't. But I wonder whether it's got that extensive appeal to, you know, to those developing countries. Let's hope so. I mean, what you love is a world game, you know, with, you know, 40 teams, all of a decent standard, like you have in football, or, you know, we have more than 40 teams of decent standard.
Can't fit it in though, can you? That's the trouble. Test cricket takes a long time. So it needs a lot of resource. So, you know, you can't fit it in. Anyway, listen, we should talk about the tournament, which really starts in earnest on Saturday. And I think one thing I will say is quite interesting is the advent of dew in the game, because probably the first time in T20 World Cups that this has had such a big potential influence. 17 of the 25 IPL games played in the UAE in the last month finished with the team batting second, winning 17 out of 25. So what's that? 65-70%. And I went to Sharjah recently and watched a game, Rajasthan Royals against Mumbai Indians. You know, there was clear evidence of dew at half time. They dragged the rope round, as they do in many countries, to try and knock the top off the dew and get it sort of settling into the soil. It didn't make any difference. The ball slid onto the Mumbai Indian batsman and they polished off the victory quite easily. So it is going to be a factor, isn't it? Which means the toss is going to be also key.
Yeah, England have been trying to mitigate this by putting balls in buckets of water and practicing bowling with wet balls and fielding and catching with wet balls. I mean, it doesn't seem quite right in a way that you have something that's so skewed against one of the teams potentially. It wasn't so much of a problem in the early part of the IPL, but gradually as it gets a bit cooler in the evenings in the UAE, the dew becomes a factor. And you know, I think as well, the other point is that you'll see quite slow over rates. I mean, we see slow over rates already in T20s. Actually, I thought Mike Atherton mentioned this in the Times. It's something I've been going on about quite a lot recently. T20s actually become the slowest form of the game, bizarrely, because, you know...
Well, they change the field every ball, don't they?
Well, there's that, yeah. And I think, you know, it could get slower with if you've got to dry the ball the whole time. You do wonder, actually, whether they, you know, whether you could have, I don't know, four balls per innings or something like that. You might get to stay.
The thing is, it's such a power orientated game, and it's such a precision orientated game as well. I mean, bowlers know if they miss their length minutely, you know, the ball goes out of the ground. And it's not like that in Test cricket. You know, you can bowl a half volley or a ball a bit wide, and it might just get either hit to the field or left alone. You don't have a left alone in T20, do you? If you just get it slightly wrong as a batsman or a bowler, you pay the penalty in T20. So you can sort of see why they do spend more time getting the ball right, getting the field setting right.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, totally, I can, yeah. I suppose the point is that when the game started, it was supposed to be a sort of you know, quick, fast product that, you know, excited, but it's now become, it's like... It's like, you know, short form chess almost. You know, it's really quite slow. Although the chess analogy doesn't totally work, because actually you can play speed chess and you can actually move quickly to get to run down your opponent's clock in chess. So let's not get too deeply into that. But there, you know, it does feel like sort of, you know, chess now, T20 cricket a little bit.
I wonder what the solution is. I mean, is it to try and get the batsman out there quicker? You know, is it to get the bowler back to his mark quicker? I mean, there just needs to be a bit more urgency. It's fair enough to figure out that the field, changing the field a bit, but it's still lacks urgency, I think.
Yeah, I mean, one way is to find a team runs, but then you might suddenly find yourself, you know, get to the 19th over, you've got 10 seconds to bowl a ball or whatever, you don't bowl it, and the other team's won because, you know, they've had runs deducted. In a way, you want a climax, don't you? You don't want to take away the climax of the match, and they've tried finding teams. It's not easy. One solution might be to, you know, keep bringing fielders in for every over you're behind, bring a fielder in, so you end up with, you know, three extra fielders inside the ring if you don't get on with it. Anyway, let's hear from Nasser. We had him in the Virtual Cricket Club on Wednesday, and we started with the issue, Drew. Actually, say, you know, does it actually just undermine the product if they, you know, if there's so much Drew around?
I don't know if it detracts, but I do think you have to factor that in, definitely. And it's not something we talk about too much in England, maybe on finals day in the blast or something, we occasionally mention it, but it is different in this part of the world, and it affects, I mean, like, for example, I know we'll probably come on to it, but England's selection, you know, England, if they wanted to play the extra batter, and they can't decide between Milan and all the others, they could play the extra batter, but then you could end up with Adil Rashid, Moeen Ali and Liam Livingstone, which is fine on an afternoon game with no dew, but if you lose the toss and you're fielding with a bar of soap and it's suddenly skidding on for the spinners, then it has affected. So it is quite interesting. Even India are talking about how many spinners they would play in an evening game. I do think it makes selection very tricky, and it makes the toss, and that's your point, Simon, does make the toss vital of an evening game.
Mm. How well do you think England are going to go in this tournament? I mean, a lot of people saying, you know, they're among the favourites, but they are missing two or three quite key players.
Yeah, I think if you'd asked me this before, and all of us actually, where were we before the World Cup, 50 over World Cup in England, you would say that England were standout favourites, the brand and style of cricket. And not only that, Jofra Archer came in and added to their quality of cricket. And barring a miracle or some slip up in a knockout game, you felt that they would be there at the final. This one, they're slightly further back from that because of what you said. There is no Jofra Archer. There is no Ben Stokes. You've got a couple, two or three players, maybe more, that are out of nick. Obviously, the skipper himself, David Milan, Chris Jordan, even Liam Livingstone hasn't got many runs since leaving England and having a wonderful summer. So there are a few question marks, but you feel with this white ball side, they are a tournament side. And come Saturday, I think they'll get their tournament heads on, and I think they'll be fine. But there's some top sides out here.
Who do you think are the sides that, you know, most fancy? I mean, is it wide open? Is it six or seven teams? Although, you know, when push comes to shove, actually, it will be two or three teams. You know, you know, India, Pakistan, England, or was it much wider than that?
I think India are the standout team, not just because of conditions, not just because it's India, not just because of the names on the team sheet, but actually the form of those names on the team sheet, whether it be Rahul, who just every time he plays a T20 game gets runs, or Rohit. Virat's a little bit down on form, but a big match player. Ishan Kishan, Suryakumar Yadav, Rishabh Pant, Jadeja, Ashwin, Shami, Bumrah. And in these conditions, that lineup just looks fantastic. So they have a group of players that is that are in fantastic nick. But then, you know, India, as we've seen in ICC tournaments, they then get to a knockout stage and suddenly all those gun batters at the top of the order have been so good, they may not have a plan B. They're suddenly 20 for three. And those middle order players haven't batted much because they've been breezing through the group stages. So I think in knockouts is where India are going to really find the true value of tournament play. But Pakistan are a good side. West Indies, as the pitches die, the power hitting in that West Indies side, New Zealand, no one talks. We did a podcast for Sky yesterday and we hardly mentioned New Zealand. And as we ended the podcast, I thought we should have mentioned New Zealand, but that's classic New Zealand. No one talks about them. And then suddenly they're in a final. So the shorter the game, as you know, Simon, the shorter the game, the more chance of an upset.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder with India, whether, you know, Bumrah, is the one thing that England haven't got, that, you know, they haven't got Jofra, and India have got Bumrah, who just seems to be able to turn on in those key moments and drive home the initiative. And he's so consistent and so difficult to play.
And a multi-phase bowler. So Bumrah is a handful up front. He swings it with that unorthodox action. So you're trying to work out his action and he's swinging it. Then in the middle, he'll come on if Kohli needs a wicket. And obviously at the death with his Yorker bowling. I guess the closest England have now would be someone like Tamal Mills, but he's so far behind in caps for England because of injuries. They'd have loved him to have 50, 100 caps by now, but he's not. So I think Tamal Mills in these conditions is a must play for me, because England's death bowling, without Archer, England's death bowling has been poor of late. And I think Mills gives you that death option.
What about Owen Morgan? I mean, he said the other day that he's prepared to drop himself. Now, Nasser, you've captained England in tournaments, you've captained England, you know, in all sorts of games all around the world. We were just talking earlier, actually, off air, Simon and I, about the last England captain to drop himself. I remember Mike Dennis doing it in the 74-75 Ashes series. Is Owen Morgan seriously going to drop himself in the T20 World Cup? Is that an option?
No, I think he would be considering it, because he always puts the team ahead of absolutely everything else and he values the team. But all I would say to Owen is, if you are valuing the team and if the team is above everything else, ask yourself this question. In a World Cup, is the England cricket team better off to have Owen Morgan, the cool, calm, calculated, experienced captain, out there in the middle under immense pressure with loads of experience? Are they a better offside with having Morgan there, irrespective of whether he's getting 10 in 10 balls or 50 in 30 balls? You cannot tell me in a World Cup, if this was a triangular or bilateral series, yeah, leave yourself out, Morgan, go and find some form. This is a World Cup. This is what they've prepared for years. And England are a better side with Morgan in it. And forget, you know, form is a very temporary thing, especially with Morgan. He's such a streaky player. He can go a year without getting runs, and then suddenly, from nowhere, he'll get 40 in 20 deliveries. So, yes, his form is a concern, and you never want to carry a player. But, you know, Morgan in a World Cup is absolutely vital. His captaincy skills, vital for England.
In fact, he's made a career out of streaky periods of form, hasn't he? I mean, throughout his career, he's gone sort of surges of runs and then loads of dips and, you know, it's sort of valleys and peaks all the time. And I think, you know, as well as his influence on the England team, I reckon his influence on the opposition is now almost at that sort of Brearley-esque. I reckon it's off-putting to other teams as well.
Yeah, and I think his team realise that. So his team realises that whatever's happening within Owen Morgan, and, you know, he may be paddling away under the water at 100 mile an hour, but his persona I think that carries over to the team. I think his team look at him in those pressure moments. His team look at him in that super over in a World Cup final when he takes time. And he also learns, Owen. You know, that time in Kolkata when Ben Stokes bowls those four deliveries to Carlos Brathwaite, he said after that he should have taken time to go and sit and to stand and chat with Ben at the end of his run. He didn't. By the next World Cup final, the 50 over, he took time to go to Jofra and listen to Jofra and ask Jofra. And I think that's why England need Morgan in these 3 weeks ahead. There will come a moment in this World Cup where the team will look at their captain and say, right, what are we going to do now? And I would prefer it to be Owen Morgan making that cool, calm, calculated decision.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he helped Calcutta Knight Riders to the IPL final as well. And they, you know, they finished fourth in the group. They were going nowhere actually before they restarted in the second half of the IPL and got them to the final. And in the end, you know, it was just a bit too much for them. They were outplayed quite heavily. Actually, also in the final as well, you know, struggling for runs. And the shot he got out to in the final, he absolutely nailed it. And then I don't know if you've seen it, but Deepak Chahar on the boundary caught an unbelievable catch. It's sort of how it goes, isn't it, really?
It is. And he had one today where there was only half an appeal in the warm-up game. I think Ish Sodhi sort of half appealed and he was given out. And he sort of, everyone, I was watching it thinking, how was that out? And he was sort of LBW. He was out LBW, I think. But it's just when you're out of nick, these sort of things. He's had a few drag-ons. Thing about Morgs is you just never know. For me, I was a fretter. So I'd be in a hotel room like this now, watching video footage and fretting and speaking to people. You just don't know with Owen Morgan whether he just literally brushes it aside and gets on with the next game. It's a great place if you can just banish everything that's happened and the next time you go out to bat, just believe you'll get runs the next time. It's much more easier said than done. It is half the battle about being an international cricketer is if you can play those mind games with yourself.
He tells a story of getting out for, I think he got out for 98 for Middlesex, and he was furious with himself and went storming up the stairs past the committee room, swearing at the top of his voice, and stormed up into the dressing room, hurled his bat and stuff. This was when he was quite young. And John Embry, who was in the committee room at the time, who was the coach, took him aside and said, you know, don't ever be like that ever again. Do not ever do that in a Lord's Pavilion or anywhere like that, you know, keep it within more. And he said he learned a massive amount from that. For you, I mean, do you get as excited by T20 NAS as you do sort of for a test series? And how do you differ in the way that you commentate? How is it different sort of preparation-wise and delivery-wise?
I do get excited. I'm a cricket, you know, sadder. I get excited about every game of cricket, really. So, when you look back, if you're asking me when I look back, I can remember virtually every test match I either played in or worked on. A T20, as you know, you'll do it. And then if you ask me about the fifth round of the IPL or something, or the, you know, the knockout stage of the IPL, I'm still trying to work out, well, who was in it and who were in the blast, who were the sides in the blast and what happened there and what happened in that game we did at Headingley. It's quite easily and quickly forgotten, apart from the massive, the major games, the finals, the semi-finals, with test matches, because it's so long to build to a crescendo, you remember those moments for a long, long time. As far as working on it, I think you have to be more switched on. You turn up to England, India in the summer, you know 99% of England's side and their faults and their strengths. You know that about the Indian side. You turn up to a world event like this, and, you know, Afghanistan, Scotland, Ireland, if Oman get through, or Namibia or whoever, you better be pretty switched on, because as you know, yours or Simon, you turn up and suddenly, right, can you go and do an interview? Can you stay across it? But, you know, it is, and you have to be a bit more excitable. And sometimes with the world feed, and when you work abroad and you work in India, you know, in England, you would have worked, Yozza, with, you know, the great Richie Beno and the mantra of less is more and let the pitchers do the talking. You work in India and you put your microphone down for 1 minute and you will have someone in your ear shouting, you know, we pay you to talk. They love to hear their commentators. And even in the England-India series this summer, which was going out to India, you would get the odd tweet in or whatever in the commentary and boring. And it probably was, But they're so, you know, you'd have Atherton and Holding on, not saying a lot and just letting the pitchers do the talking. And they would want chat, they want stats. So commentary varies from tournament to tournament, format to format, and in parts of the world, I reckon.
Do you find yourself sort of under pressure from the ICC in a way as a commentator to say certain things or not say certain things? I think that's quite, you know, interesting for people to learn. I mean, there was Mikey did something in the World Cup, didn't he?
He talked about calling no balls and blaming the umpire for missing them or something. And he basically took a stance saying, well, you know, you should illuminate that when a no ball is missed by an umpire. And the ICC sort of told him off for saying that or suggesting that.
I don't think so. That was one occasion. I think after that, actually, they did respond after that saying, we would like you to call it as you see it. You know, in that commentary box, you've got people, you know, there are stubborn people out there. Holding and Atherton are very stubborn people. You are not going to tell them to this is what you're going to say, and you're not allowed to say this. You know, this is not why they do the job or I do the job. You're trying to do it, you're trying to call it as you see it. And if you don't want to employ me next week because I did that, and that goes for players as well. We're not cheerleaders for the team or any team. You shouldn't have any bias towards the team. You know, it shouldn't be we or us. Occasionally I get it wrong. I got it wrong in the summer when I had a bit of a rant on Third Man, and I said something like, I think it was the Oval game and Joe Root was bowling Wokes and Jimmy into the ground on the fourth afternoon at Lord's. And I did a Third Man and said, why aren't we bowling spin here? And I quickly corrected it to, well, why aren't England bowling spin here? Because you're supposed to be unbiased. And it's very difficult when you've played and captained for England, but you're supposed to be unbiased. You're supposed to just call it as you see it. And if people don't like it, I'm talking about the people that hire you, then so be it, really.
Nasser's saying talking passionately, as he always does. And I think passion is something that is really important, is what makes him such a fantastic commentator, actually, is he's so invested in the game and so impartial, actually, as well. You know, he talks often about not using the word we or us or anything, trying to talk about both teams equally. But, you know, he does a lot of research. I had a lovely text from Rob Key, actually, because I was trying in the virtual club to ask one sneaky question. We have this quiz, don't we, every week with our guest, how well do you know yourself? And I always like to try, probably to your annoyance, and ask a silly question, sort of slightly about them, their personality.
Well, they're normally so imprecise, Jos.
Well, I know there's no kind of proper answers. There's no concrete answer. If you ask someone what's your most irritating habit, it depends, you know, what mood they're in and, you know, what day it is, I suppose. But I was trying to find out what NASA's most annoying habit was. So I asked Rob Key, his, you know, sort of sidekick in the commentary box, the Sky box. And actually, Rob, to his great credit, said, NASA is one of the most conscientious and nicest people I've ever worked with. And he's extraordinary. And I can't think of anything terrible or annoying about him at all. So we had to leave that question alone. And he is incredibly passionate and he's incredibly knowledgeable. And he's just great to listen to, isn't he?
He is. So what did you make of his comments about Owen Morgan? Owen Morgan saying the other day that he's prepared to drop himself, you know, if he doesn't get runs, say, in first two or three games. Do you think there will become a situation where he might contemplate and might actually do it?
I don't, actually. I mean, I think he's got to say that to probably, you know, keep people off his back and maybe just be honest, you know, that it is something that obviously you have to consider. But, I mean, firstly, he's never been a person who has consistency in his form. You know, he goes in, you know, sort of very stark kind of directions, either very good or very bad. But the other thing is, the most important thing is the captaincy thing and the impact he has, both on his team, giving his team huge amounts of confidence. And I think also the way he can undermine the opposition, that they know he's there as a sort of X factor, someone who doesn't get wound up. You know, look at Kohli when he captains. He gets really sort of fractious and he goes up to a bowler who's gone for two fours and you can sort of see him with his hands on his hips looking a bit stern, and that's just terrible for a bowler who gets more nervous and anxious as a result. Morgan is just totally trusts his team.
You know, he's relaxed, he's composed, he knows what he wants. He will allow the bowler to make his own decisions, and he totally trusts them. And the opposition see him like that and see him in that completely phlegmatic, unflappable sort of way. And, you know, they sort of think, God, even if they are winning the game, it starts to bring self-doubts into their heads. So I think he's a massive bonus to England, even if he's not making runs, and he will make some runs somewhere.
How much of that is an act, do you think? Has he sort of taught himself to do that, to sort of strip himself of that emotion? And the other thing that comes to my mind is, underneath it all, it must eat away at him not scoring any runs. It's got to, because you know, he knows there are lots of exciting, talented white ball batters, you know, around the English game. And I suppose I'm thinking about the future a little bit. That there'll come a time when he might say, well, actually, do I really justify my place in the side anymore with all this talent around and about? And it is one of those situations, how England select their team for this competition. I mean, it looks as if, you know, do they leave out Moen? Do they leave out, you know, with the damp ball situation? Do they leave out Moen? Do they leave out Milan, who's actually still the world number one rated batter? You know, so they haven't got some easy selection decisions to make. So it must, I wonder, you know, it does sort of eat away. I mean, I really do need a score here. It wouldn't be human if it didn't, surely.
I think you can see the consternation in his face, actually, when he's batting. You know, that sort of extra concentration that he's putting in, and the way he tells him to watch the ball every time, and almost a slight frown on his face as he's trying to concentrate to the max to make the right decisions on shot making. I think the other players, the Joss Butlers and, you know, the other teammates, his sort of more seasoned teammates, will be constantly in his ear saying, you know, we need you, mate. You know, a good innings is just around the corner. And I mean, if I go back to the first time I ever met Owen Morgan when he was 16, he's got this habit of doing things out of the blue when you least expect it. So in that match, some benefit match, you know, I think I've told the story before, you know, where he fiddled around, nudged a few singles, and I thought, well, he doesn't look much good, 16-year-old in a club game. And then suddenly a massive six over long on and finished the game. And I think he's just got that ability to almost kind of completely take any emotion, any previous performances out of the equation. I think he has a very close relationship with Nathan Lehman as well, who's been on his sort of shoulder for most of the IPL as well with Kolkata Knight Riders, and is a very clever strategist and analyst of the game. So the two of them working together to find the right strategy for England, I'm sure he'll make runs somewhere. He might slide down the order to number seven and become a finisher, but that's fine.
Would an England side led by Joss Butler in the T20 World Cup be immeasurably worse than a side led by Owen Morgan?
Yes, because I think Butler needs all his focus to be on his batting and wicket-keeping, and he doesn't have that extra Midas touch that Morgan does. I mean, I'm not saying he's a bad captain. I'm sure he's perfectly good. He's won matches for England as captain, you know, a few times, but I'd rather he was concentrating on his batting and Morgan does what he does best, and that is figuring out how to undermine the opposition.
Right. England get their campaign underway against West Indies on Saturday. It is a repeat of the 2016 final. It's amazing, isn't it? You know, we have so much T20 and we haven't had a tournament for 5 years. We're going to get two in two, mind. They're going to make up for it. England, West Indies, it's a mouthwatering prospect. Let's just have a look at who we think might win the tournament. Is it wide open? I asked that question of NASA. Is it wide open? Or when it comes down to it, and push comes to shove, are we really talking about two or three sides that can win this tournament?
Yeah, you are talking about two or three sides, but which one of those three sides is really hard to say. I mean,
Who are the two or three sides?
India, yeah. Clearly are the I'd say head and shoulders above anyone else because of a couple of reasons. I think their batsmen are very versatile. I think, you know, the way they bat in these conditions, it's not just go and bludgeon it. They have players with wrists and, you know, sort of stroke players like Rohit Sharma, for instance. It's not just about power. They can mix power and, you know, style and kind of artistry. And those pitches are not the easiest, actually. So it's good to have a balance there of some people who can whack it out of the park, like Hardik Pandya and Kishan, and some who can play a more kind of controlled innings, but still affluent innings. They've got excellent spinners who are really good at exploiting the conditions, as we've seen already with Jadeja and Ashwin, and a couple of, and you know, leg spinners as well. And but they've got Jasprit Bumrah, who for me is the best T20 bowler in the world, if not all format bowler in the world. And he's just got this ability to under, you know, get the openers out with the new ball, then bowl in the middle and bowl brilliantly at the death. So, you know, they've got all bases covered, India. I think England's death bowling is still a little bit fragile without Jofra, although I think Timal Mills is an excellent addition. But like, I still don't entirely trust the likes of Jordan, you know, Tom Curran, if he plays, Mark Wood. You know, they're not really death bowlers. Chris Wokes is pretty good, but, you know, so that's that issue. Obviously, England's batting is immense. So I just think, you know, India have got that sort of extra ingredient of sort of all-round ability. And then a third one, well, I'm looking at Australia or New Zealand, really. I don't think the West Indies have got quite enough versatility with the ball or quality with the ball. And their batting has sort of gone off a bit, hasn't it? They're still a big tournament team, but their batting sort of dipped a bit. So I think Australia and New Zealand, and maybe Pakistan will come into the mix. Unpredictable. But I sort of feel probably Australia, India and England are the favourites.
Oh, that's interesting, because I would have gone for Pakistan ahead of Australia.
And would you?
In fact, I am going to go for Pakistan ahead of Australia. I mean, we can all be shot down, and you know, in the next few weeks, it's T20. You know, there is that volatility about it. I just feel with Pakistan, they know the conditions. They played in the UAE a lot. It's like a second home to them. I think they're well suited to T20, and I think they could do well in this tournament. I think they're going to be semi-finalists. And I think if England were to qualify against them, say, I think they would be dangerous opponents for England in a semi-final. So I got a feeling that England are not going to do quite as well as everyone's expecting them. And the reason for that is their bowling. I think their bowling is a little bit vulnerable. I really hope Timal makes an impact. I mean, you know,
BBC's Timal?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've worked with Timal a bit, and I know some of the things that he's gone through. I'm not that close to him, but I know some of the things he's gone through, you know, with injuries. And he, you know, he's, even though he's only playing T20, and so therefore the stress on his body is not quite as great as he was playing throughout a whole season of 50 over cricket and red ball cricket. I know he's had lots of injuries and he's had to fight hard. It's great actually to see him, you know, get himself fit, bowl well in the 100 as he did, and get an England squad. So I hope he does well, but I just feel like you, that there's some vulnerabilities in England's attack, and the spin department, I think, is okay, but it's not perhaps quite as strong. Well, it's not as strong as India. So I'm just slightly concerned by England. I know they can be an exciting side to watch. I just wonder whether they've got it in them to win a T20 World Cup. You can see them doing well in a 50 over competition, but in a T20 World Cup, I'm not so sure. Anyway, well, I'm there to be, you know, shot down in 4 weeks' time, and if they're lifting the trophy, or 3 weeks' time, whatever it is, 14th of November, they're lifting the trophy, then everyone can say Yabu sucks. But so I've India clearly got a great chance. Pakistan, I think, got a decent chance. And I sort of put England sort of third in a way. Mm. And then, you know, who knows? Probably New Zealand lifting the trophy in a few weeks' time, you know, or the West Indies. I don't fancy Australia, actually. I really don't fancy them. But
I think that maybe, I mean, I know what you mean. They were looking really good a year ago. I mean, watching the Big Bash a year ago, we both covered quite a lot of the Big Bash, and there was some real talent sort of emerging, but it hasn't really kicked on, some of it. They're probably still a bit reliant on Mitchell Stark and Pat Cummins. I mean, Hazelwood as well. You know, those three bowlers are obviously top class, and Zampa. I think their bowling is pretty good, actually, but their batting hasn't kind of quite flourished of late. So I see what you mean, but I kind of think they'll rise to the occasion. And, you know, talking of Pakistan, it's India v Pakistan on Sunday, isn't it? So we'll see. There'll be some bragging rights after that game. Exciting.
Yeah, and then normally in world tournaments, it seems it's India who come out on top. Of course, they didn't in the 2017 Champions Trophy final. That, you know, one of the most incredible cricket matches I think I've ever seen, with, you know, Pakistan winning a final against this very strong Indian team by 180 runs. I mean, 180 runs. It was just an incredible day at the Oval. There's a lot of talent, in the teams that are going to be competing in the next few weeks. So if you have a good run out, you get a fair wind, you know, you can make significant progress in the tournament. West Indies winning last time illustrated that. So, you know, and I wouldn't totally rule out West Indies either, because of their power game on slow pitches. That, you know, that might be a factor. But if you had to tie me down, I would say, yeah, India, Pakistan, possibly England.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'll go along with that. I just think Australia might sneak in there. And I think India will win it. Not least because they'll be stung by not winning that World Test Championship, having topped the table, and New Zealand came in and stole it from under their noses. I think Kohli will be driven to win this trophy, which I'm trying to think, they won it, of course, the first time in 2007, which was a transformative moment for Indian cricket, because it was the year before the IPL started, and it really sort of basically it was the fireworks, the fuse in a way, that lit the fireworks of the IPL. They haven't quite sort of shone in it since, so it's tight. They're due, I think, and they have got an incredibly good squad.
Well, they could almost put two teams in the competition, and both those teams would be competitive, it seems to me. So therefore, Yoz, we're all looking forward to, on the 14th of November, a South Africa Sri Lanka final then.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, and the beauty of T20, of course, is that it's impossible to predict. You know, one innings of 20 off four balls, as we saw with Carlos Brathwaite, can change the game. So it's all to play for, and all sorts of things can happen. Carlos Brathwaite, no more, of course. He's more famous now for commentary than he is for cricket.
Yeah, we all remember that name. You know, whose name are we going to remember by the 14th of November in this competition, I wonder?
Well, yeah, and you'll be commentating, I presume, won't you, on some of the games?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing something. Yeah, Afghanistan against Pakistan, I'm doing next week, one of the games I'm doing next week, which I'm, you know, really looking forward to. You know, I wonder whether Afghanistan can, you know, make some progress in the competition. They didn't in the World Cup in England in 2019. You know, lots of people sort of punted them beforehand, but they actually had quite a disappointing time. But you're right, but the shorter nature of the game, you know, probably suits them a bit more, certainly in terms of causing an upset anyway. So Afghanistan are in there. England are not going to be playing Scotland. And of course, the last time those two teams met, Scotland won in Edinburgh before England became.
Yeah, so Bangladesh are the other team that we know are in England's group now. Yeah. And we wait to see what happens on Friday. So in the final group, more qualifying group matches. Anyway, Saturday is the big day for England against the West Indies in Dubai. It starts at 3 p.m. English time. And we'll look back at the tournament after England have played a couple of games in midweek next week, when we'll also have another guest in the Virtual Cricket Club. You can go to worldsbestcricketclub.com to join us and ask direct questions to our special guest. I'll announce over the weekend who that's going to be. There'll be memorabilia to win as well. And of course, it's all in aid of the Professional Cricketers Trust. So please join us at worldsbestcricketclub.com for another event next Wednesday. And we'll be back with you soon after that as well.
Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye for now. Don't take our predictions too seriously.
Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.